we're primarily interested in the impact of this discussion and the survey on the mental health and well-being of LGBTI people. And what we figure is that as this debate unfolds and moves into different phases, so it's coming to crunch time soon, and then after crunch time there'll be some government decision. Down the track at some point there'll be some resolution and laws will be changed. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's more a matter of when. But being able to map the changes in well-being and mental health and sense of efficacy, depression, anxiety, those sorts of things over that period of time allows us to see how the climate and the government's response has an impact on a portion of our community.
There would be some people who might already be experiencing things like depression and anxiety, and they may find that exacerbated by what's going on in the press and the general public at the moment. There may be other people who are doing pretty well, pretty smooth sailing, and find that this is affecting them. I know there's been a lot of commentary sort of online of people who say it brings up a lot of feelings of being back in high school and some of the depression and anxiety that can accompany that for LGBTQI people.
One thing that I think we kind of started to consider recently was that we hadn't originally considered was the sense of anger that people are feeling. Members of that community are feeling, particularly in response to the High Court, which really affirmed the government's position, I think. Perception was that it affirmed the government's position. Sense of anger, sense of frustration, sense of being singled out. And we know those things have implications for people's sense of well-being, people's mental health down the track.
Have you got from any responses that people feel like they're somewhat being misrepresented or misspoken for?
I would say perhaps not that they feel misrepresented or misspoken for, but they feel a little powerless. You know, this very big conversation is taking place that they feel affects them at the end of the day. And they're really out of control of that. There's only so much individual people feel like they can do. And so I guess there's a sense of frustration born out of that.
And frustration that it remains non-binding, that this can continue on for some time. Nothing really needs or nothing is 100% promised beyond this postal survey.
Yeah, absolutely. In Ireland, you know, there was a very clear process laid out by what was required by law. Although the High Court did affirm the government's position, this we really didn't have a precedent for it in Australia, and there's nothing to indicate that a yes or no result either way is really going to settle this issue for anybody.
Why track people's experiences over time?
Really, this is a fairly standard way of doing research. What we want to see is how change occurs for people over time. We will see different things happen as the survey unfolds. So there's a survey, then there's a High Court response to the government's position. Then the survey will close. Then the government will announce the results of the survey. Then government will announce a position. We're looking at two sorts of things. We're looking at things that we know vary. You know, your mood changes on a day-to-day basis, that sort of stuff. But your sense of who you are, your sense of your efficacy, your sense of fairly stable personality type things generally remains pretty stable over time. So those two things we anticipate will move around quite a lot for people as the process unfolds. Sampling people over time allows us to see how things change for them given changes in the environment.
Do you think it's solely dependent on that and I guess what happens or what unfolds politically? Because you say there, you know, this would eventually become legislation, but you seem quite confident that, you know, at some point in time we'll move towards that direction. Do you think people can be as optimistic themselves to say, you know, that this is going to happen?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I feel it might be one of those situations where you kind of can't see the forest for the trees. As much as people might say logically to themselves, this is going to happen, this is inevitable, when it feels so drawn out, it can be difficult to really convince yourself of that. You know, I think people might feel, you know, they feel it more than they think it. They feel this will never happen, even though they know that's not really, probably not the case.
This inescapability, was that something that also came up, this that people can't get away from this conversation, or they're too ingrained into it?
That's an interesting question, the idea of being too ingrained. There's definitely the sense that people can't escape it even when they want to. You know, you cannot watch a news update. You cannot sit on a bus and listen to your fellow passengers without coming across something about this issue at the moment. It's interesting to see whether that is engaging for people, whether they feel, you know, engaged with an issue that's affecting them or if they feel worn down by it. There are certainly some responses so far that sort of fall on both sides of that coin. People there might be a bit of a sense of community. We've seen a lot of rallies and a really real upsurge in community events and activism in response to this, which could be seen as a positive. But on the other hand, people, as I said earlier, feel really individually worn down.
And what do you think that leads to psychologically, or what can that lead to in other instances where people are so worn out by something?
We know when that happens, when people are under chronic stress, when people feel disenfranchised, when people feel they've been isolated from society for whatever reason, that does have consequences for their well-being, for their affect, for anxiety, stress. And we know those things have implications for physical health as well as mental health. You know, something Liam was saying just before made me think, it's okay for somebody to disagree with you. It's okay for somebody to have an opinion that's different from yours. The interesting thing here, one of the interesting things here, is the way that disagreement is justified. So a portion of our community should not have equal rights with the rest of our community. There's a position, you know, we can agree or disagree on that. But then watching the range of justifications that come along to support that difference of opinion, I think is the thing that's causing a lot of discomfort for LGBTQI people.
And you raised, I know this is a bit of a tangent, but you were talking about data there before, and Liam, that was something that you raised, that there is an absence of it in this area. Is it because something like this has never really been on the cards before? We just don't have access to that information?
Yeah, absolutely. This is quite interesting from a research point of view, because obviously the marriage equality debate has been going on in Australia for several years now. So it's always been on the cards, so it's been quite difficult to gather data on that, because it's an issue that's never gone away. So you can't really separate people's responses to that debate from their responses to other day-to-day stresses in their lives, and that's works, relationships, that sort of thing. But now it's really come to a head, and this issue has become all-consuming, that it is kind of having a direct effect that that may be quantifiable on Australians. And yeah, this allows us to capture it for the first time in a way that we haven't been able to before.
Where do you think we go from here? Seeing as this has been such a contentious and hot topic now, as you'd mentioned, for a couple of years, do you imagine us reaching a peak when it comes to research and discourse around this, and then it dropping back down? Because I know, as a queer Australian, we need to continue to rally for queer and LGBTIQ causes. There is a big concern within the transgender community too, that if the marriage equality debate continues, we get it, then everyone will forget about other queer Australians. Do you see that there would be a research interest, say, for example, post-marriage equality, looking at the mental health implications of transgender equal rights?
I really hope so. That's definitely a hope and an interest of mine, something a lot of people have contacted me while we've been collecting participants for this survey, saying, what about the experience of, you know, group X, Y, Z, you know, people who, despite us capturing anyone within the LGBTQI community, we may not have been directly looking to recruit. I'm thinking, for example, of people who are married to transgender people. They may not identify as LGBTQI themselves, but being in that really close relationship in a sort of LGBTQI context, they're also feeling the effects of this debate. I certainly hope that down the track, research will become more engaged with those people and really represent their experiences, both positive and negative.
I think it's also interesting from the point of view that this is an example of one of those elements of social change. There's an opportunity here for legislation to lead change. And while that's the case, it doesn't mean that everything will be hunky-dory once that legislation has passed. There's certainly potential to see some residual effects, not only of this discussion, but also of prejudice in general towards LGBTQI people. And I think that's where research like this can go to inform how we discuss, how we talk, and how we respond in the future.